Okay, so we are learning Perek Zayin of Sefer Shoftim. I believe last week we ended with Pasuk Yud Gimel. So let's just do a brief recap of what we're talking about, what the Perek is talking about, and then we'll take it from there. So Perek Zayin, begins with Gideon camping with his men. I think we said about 10,000 men. I'm sorry, 30,000, right? 30,000 men camping with them, against the getting ready to defeat Midian. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says it's too many people, right? It's too many people, so you can't have that many people, and therefore we have to do something to get rid of some of these people. And Gideon makes an announcement that whoever is afraid. And we discussed they're afraid of their averos, they're afraid of the actual warfare, whatever the case is, whatever they're afraid of, they should leave. And this whole, these 22,000 people leave, and he's left with less than 10,000 people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says it's still too many people, and therefore he says we need to do something else. And he tells Gideon to take his men down to the river and run this test and see who's going to bend down and cup the water to their hands, and the person's going to lick, to lap the water up with their hands, with their tongue, I'm sorry, in their hands. Those people you're going to keep. Those are the people that are going to go to battle with you. And the other people who bend down, who kneel down and just stick their faces in the water, those people you're not going to go to battle with. And we describe because those people essentially were used to doing Avodah Zarah, and that's why they were bowing down. They were used to kneeling, used to bowing down. That's why they did that. So he's left with 300 men, we learned. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is the number that I want, 300 men. I don't want Klal Yisrael to think that they're winning the war because of them, because of their manpower. 300 men, you and 300 men, this is what's going to win this war. This is what's going to win this battle. And he tells Gideon that I'm going to give Midian into your hands. Remember, it's Midian, Amalek, and this B'nai Kedem, these eastern people. And I'm going to give them into your hands. So go down to the camp and you're going to defeat them. And then we learned at the end, Hashem says, if you're a little bit afraid, so here's what I want you to do. I want you to go down to the camp and I want you to listen to what the soldiers are saying. Listen to what the soldiers are talking about. Gideon goes down with his servant, with his helper. He goes down and he listens. It's the middle of the night or beginning of the night, we'll learn about. And he listens that this fellow says to his friend, I just had this dream, this strange dream. And we learned last week it's a dream about this roll, this like, literally like a challah roll, some sort of a barley roll that rolls through the camp and it crashes into the tent and it, upends the tent and the tent is turned upside down. And we said last week that we learned the Malbim and the Alshech and all the different ideas and the symbolism behind this dream. And essentially one of the running themes, according to the Medrash, is that this was in the merit of the Karban HaOmer, that this was Pesach time, and the Karban HaOmer we know was brought in the second day of Pesach. So this was in the merit of the Karban HaOmer that Klal Yisrael brought, and that was going to be one of the merits of their victory. Okay, so this is the dream that this fellow tells his friend, and Pasuk Yudal, that's where we're picking up this week, and that is the friend who's listening responds to the fellow who had the dream. So again, Perek Zayin of Sefer Shoftim, Pasuk Yudalid, Vayan Re'ehu Vayomer. So the friend who's listening to this dream turns to the fellow who had the dream and he says to him, Ein zos bilti im cherev Gideon ben Yoash ish Yisrael. He says, this dream, I know what this dream means. This dream symbolizes the sword of Gideon ben Yoash, the man of Yisrael. That's what this dream is all about. And just like this roll, came through and knocked over the tent and upended the tent so that it was upside down, this is the sword of Gideon ben Yoash. He's going to come in and he's going to defeat us. That's it. The Alshech, has a question. He's in doubt. Is it that the fellow really understood the dream? Or is this something divine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, inspired him and allowed him to understand the meaning of the dream? But either way, this is what the fellow understood. And perhaps he says he understood that Bnei Yisrael really weren't deserving of any type of miraculous victory. They weren't. Remember, as we discussed, Bnei Yisrael were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They were doing Avodah Zarah, much like the Goyim were, and they weren't all that on such a great madrega at this point. And therefore, they kind of assumed the Midianim assumed that if any victory was going to happen for the Jewish people, it was going to be in the merit of Gideon, their leader, because he, after all, was a tzaddik. And the Mitzudas David says that the imagery here, just like this little roll, you have imagined like a little challah roll, rolling through a camp and knocking over a tent, a little challah roll knocking over a big tent. So too, that was going to be Gideon, this one person who was going to be able to defeat this massive army, as we learned last week, that Midian and Amalek and Bnei Kedem, it was like a massive force, almost like locusts, we said, spread across the earth. It was like a tremendous, tremendous force. This one person, Gideon, is going to come and he's going to defeat all of them. And Ish Yisrael, it's interesting, they're calling him Ish Yisrael. So apparently the word was out. They knew about him. They knew about Gideon. And not only did they know about Gideon, that he was a warrior, but they also knew that Gideon was a Choshva person. Mitzudas Tzion says that Ish always means Chashivus, always means a prominent, somebody important, not just a regular Joe. So no offense, Joe. But, it was a regular, Gideon was a Choshva person. So, and they recognized that, and they were, a little bit nervous. And especially this fellow, this Re'ehu, who's listening to the dream, he's a little bit scared, and he realizes this dream really is foretelling what's going to happen here, that Gideon's going to come, and he's going to wipe out our camp, the Midianite camp. Tesvav, so now Gideon and his man are sitting there, kind of in the shadows, listening to what this fellow is telling his friend about the dream, and listening to the interpretation, and what's Gideon's reaction? Gideon hears mispar hachalom. Two interesting words here. Mispar hachalom. Mispar usually means a number. The number of the dream. It's a strange way of expressing it. We'll see it in a second what the mafarshim say. V'es shivro, which is also an interesting word. Vayishtachu. What do? They bow down. Gideon and his man, they hear this and they bow down. Vayoshav el machane Yisrael. They return. They turn on their heels. They return to machane Yisrael. So Gideon says to Klal Yisrael, get up, let's go. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us the camp of Midian. We're going to win. We're going to be victorious. And again, keep in mind, just a couple of psukim ago, Gideon himself was nervous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, if you're nervous, if you're yare, if you're afraid, go down to the Midianite camp and listen to them. And this was, of course, divinely orchestrated, that this fellow would have the dream. He would tell his friend. Gideon would overhear it. Gideon now has the confidence. He realizes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind him. He's going to be victorious. He says, let's go. Just in terms of the word mispar, very interesting. Mispar, so again, usually we understand the word mispar to mean number. Rashi said mispar means the story. It's like a sipur, like from the language of sipur, that this is the story of the dream. The radak means that it's from the language of misaper, to tell over, that he was retelling the dream. And the Al-Sheikh says Mispar refers to the different stages. If you remember the Al-Sheikh and how he explained the dream, he understood that there were different stages of the defeat of the Malach of Midian. Right? The angel of Midian was going through different stages of defeat. That the HaKadosh Baruch Hu weakened him first, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu totally defeated him. So these stages, that's the Mispar. The number is the number of stages of defeat of the Malach of Midian. Shivro, according to the Radak, Shivro means the interpretation. A dream is sealed and hidden. The interpretation of the dream breaks it open. So it's a language of breaking, Lishbor. And that's how he understands Shivro. Much like those of you who are familiar in Mishnayos and Gemara, we use the word Shover is a receipt. That when someone pays off his debt, when someone pays a loan that they've taken, so they receive a Shover, they receive a receipt. That receipt breaks the loan. It breaks the loan. Then now there's no longer a loan. That's how the Radak understands the word Shivro. And the Al-Sheikh says Shivro means his hope. That this is what Gideon was hoping for. He was hoping for a message from the Ribono Shel, from some divine message, that he would be victorious. And this is exactly what he was hoping for. So Baruch Hashem, he walks away very happy. Interesting that if you look, what do they do? Vayishtachu. What's Gideon's reaction? Vayishtachu. He bows down. The first reaction that he does, Hodah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Thank God. He thanks HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to be victorious. That's number one. And number two, listen to the message that he gives Bnei Yisrael. Vayomer kumu kinasan Hashem biyedchem. Hashem has given in your hands. Not that Hashem has given in my hands. And listen, Gideon, Midian, everyone knows that the miraculous victory here is going to be because of who? It's going to be because of Gideon. It's going to be in the schus of Gideon, not in the schus of Bnei Yisrael, who are Ovdei Avodah Zarah at this time. But nevertheless, he says, in his humility, says the Al-Sheikh, Kinasan Hashem b'yedchem. Hashem has given you in your hands. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given Midian. Pasuk Tes Zayin. So now, what does Gidon do? Now again, it's going to be miraculous, but as we've seen throughout Sefer Shoftim, Sefer Yehoshua, even the miraculous battles, the Shoftim and Yehoshua and the generals, they always prepared for them in a natural way, because that's, after all, we have to do our Hishtavos. So even if we get some sort of a message from Hashem that the victory will be miraculous, but at the end of the day, we have to do our Hishtavos, we have to do what we have to do, and therefore they all went about it using military strategy. So comes Gidon in Pasuk Tezayin, Vayachatz es Shlosh Meos Ha'ish, and Gidon takes his 300 men and he splits them, Shlosha Roshi. He splits them into three heads. And the heads here doesn't mean like officers or generals, but it means like three groups. So he splits them into three groups. And listen to this, and we're going to see a little bit more symbolism here, in a minute. Fascinating. Vayitain Shofaros V'yad Kulam. He gives each and every one of the 300 men a shofar to blow, right? They used to blow the shofar as, when they're going out to battle. That was like the battle cry. The chadim reikim, he gives them each empty jugs, kad as a jug. The lapidim besocha kadim, and he gives them torches. And now the torches are placed inside the jug. Fascinating. What's the pshat? So, number one, why? Let's focus on the end for a minute. Why are the torches placed inside the jugs? So Rashi says pashup shad is that they needed light, right? Remember, this is night. It's the middle of the night here. They're going to fight in the middle of the night. The element of surprise. So it was nighttime. They needed light, but they didn't want the Midianite camp to see them and to see that they were approaching, to see that they were coming. So they had these lights. They had these torches, but they hid them inside the jugs. So apparently it gave a little bit of light, but not enough light to give away their presence to the Midyan. That's what Rashi says is the Pashup Shad. But beautifully Rashi says, what's the Drash, what's the Medrash here? What does this remind us of? Think in the Torah. It should remind us of something in the Torah. Shofaros, a shofar. Okay, Kadim Reikim is not going to be, we'll see in a minute, it's a little bit of a stretch. But we'll see there is a connection. The lapidim, right? Where do we see this? So says Rashi, we see it by Matan Torah. Because if you look at Parshas Yisro, Perek Chav Pasuk Tesvav, which you don't have in front of you unless you have a Chumash, but I'll read it for you. Listen to this Pasuk. This is Parshas Yisro. V'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos, right? This should be familiar to you. V'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos, that the entire nation of Klal Yisrael at Har Sinai, they saw the sounds, the kolos. Okay, we're going to come to the kolos in a minute. The es halapidim, right? They saw the lapidim. Now there were torches, or there was light. The es kol shofar, right? And there's a shofar at Har Sinai. The es hahar ashen, and there was also smoke. Torches, which are on fire, produced smoke. So this is the pasuk that we have by Matan Torah, and says Rashi that this. That these the instruments that Gidon wanted his soldiers to have were symbolic of Matan Torah. And you see here what? You see here an amazing thing. You see that despite the fact that Gidon has basically a haftach, a promise, that he's going to be successful, that's what he heard from this dream. Kadosh Baruch Hu told him to go down and hear, and that's what he heard. Not only that, but Kadosh Baruch Hu told him, I want you to go with 300 men and you're going to be victorious. The dream was this barley roll, which was reminiscent and symbolic of the Karban HaOmer, which was in their schus, but nevertheless, despite all of that, a divine promise, the schus of the Karban HaOmer, at the end of the day, we always need the schus HaTorah. In order to be victorious, in order to be successful at anything we as Jews do, military or otherwise, we need the schus HaTorah. And therefore, Gidon, as he's going to battle, wants symbolism of Har Sinai. He wants symbolism of Matan Torah in the hands of these soldiers as they go to battle. And that's why he gives them all lapidim, to remember the lapidim of Matan Torah. He gives them all a shofar, to remember the kol ha-shofar of Matan Torah. And he gives them all also kadim. We'll see in a second what they do with the kadim, which also will symbolize another element of Matan Torah. Actually, you know what? The Al-Sheikh says it right here. So I'll just tell you, the Al-Sheikh says that what they're going to do, part of the element of surprise here, is they're going to take the kadim, these jugs, and they're going to smash them. And the noise of these 300 jugs smashing at the same time is going to surprise and scare the Midianite camp. That's what they're going to do. So the sound, right, the sound of the smashing, the crashing of the jugs, that's the kolos, that's the sound, the thunder, and the great sound at Har Sinai. And the Alshich says also that these things also symbolize Har Sinai. The Alshich also, in an ingenious way, says that these things also symbolize the three avos. How do these things symbolize the three avos? So Avraham was the shofar. Now he doesn't explain why, but my guess, you can think to yourself, my guess is that the reason why the shofar is because Avraham, after Akedas Yitzchak, when he brought Yitzchak up to the Akedah, and the Malach told him to stop, so what did Avraham bring? An ayil, right? The shofar. That's why we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. We lay in that parsha on Rosh Hashanah. So that's my guess, that that's what the Alshich meant. So Avraham was symbolized by the shofar, Yitzchak by the torches. Now again, he doesn't explain why, but perhaps it's because of the fire of Akedas Yitzchak. Even though, again, Yitzchak was not sacrificed in the end, but there was a fire there. So maybe the torches are symbolic of that fire of Akedas Yitzchak. Yaakov was the jugs, the noise of the jugs. He says, as Yitzchak told him when he gave him the bracha, Kol Kol Yaakov, like the voice of Yaakov. That's what we're always thinking about, the Kol Yaakov. So the voice, the sound of those jugs was the Kol Yaakov. He says, alternatively, we know also there was some connection between Yaakov and jugs. What was that? Vayivaser Yaakov Levada. When Yaakov went back over the Nahar Yabok, he went back over the Yabok River to go get the Pachim Ketanim, to go get those small jugs. So Yaakov also had a connection with the jugs. And perhaps the jugs, he says, was also reminiscent of Yaakov. And just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Yaakov from the angel of Esav, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu will save Bnei Yisrael from the angel of Midian. That's how the Alshich understands the imagery here. He says, not only does this hint to Matan Torah, not only is this symbolic of the three avos, but it's also symbolic of the war that Avram, the battle that Avram waged against the four kings. Remember the four kings and the five kings, and the four kings won, and then Avram went to war against the four kings to rescue Lot. So what's the connection here? So he and Eliezer went to battle against the four kings. Now it's interesting. There's a pasuk in Parshas Lech Lecha which tells us, and again I'm reading, this is Parshas Lech Lecha, Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Yudalet. The Torah tells us, Vayishma Avraham ki nishba achiv. Avram hears that Lot was taken captive by the four kings. Vayarek es chanichav yilidei veso, and he girds, right, like gird the loins, whatever that means. But he arms the people of his house, his servants, his army, so to speak. Shmona asar ushlosh meos. So the Torah says there were 318 men. And he armed these 318 men, and he took them and went to war by Yerdof Adon, and they went to war against the four kings to rescue Lot. Now Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, that even though the Torah says there were 318 men, but it doesn't mean literally there were 318 men. Rabbi Seinu Amru says Rashi, the Medrash tells us, Eliezer Levado Haya, that it was really only Avraham and Eliezer alone. So why does it say 318? Vehu minyan gematria shel shemo. The gematria of Eliezer is 318, I think, right? 270, yeah, 318. The gematria of Eliezer is 318. You can do the math, right? I see Moshe's counting wheels are turning. So the gematria of Eliezer is 318. So he says that the pasuk really means that he and Eliezer went to battle alone against the four kings and won, of course, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu was on their side, and they were able to rescue Lot. So the Alshich says a fascinating thing here. He says Gidon had how many men? 300. Okay, Gidon had 300 men. Now we still need 18 in order to connect this, right? Because Avram had 318, and Gidon, we want to have 318. So Gidon had 300. Gidon's name, listen to this, very creative and ingenious. Gidon's name was also, what name was given to him by his father in last parak, and the beginning of this parak, he's called that name, Yerubal, spelled in the Navi, Yud Resh Beis Ayin Lamed. Okay, now I'm not going to ask you to do the gematria of that name, because the Alshich employs the gematria of Mispar Kata. Okay, now I'm not a big Kabbalist, and I'm not a big Bucky in gematrias, but apparently I learned today, I did a little research, that there are at least four different ways of calculating gematria. The way we do it is like the standard way. And then there's these other ways of calculating gematria that are, you know, based on Kabbalah and things like that. So again, I'm not a big Kabbalist. I'm not a big Bucky in gematria, but this is interesting. So the Mispar Katan apparently means that you take every letter and you take its numerical value, but you only take the first digit of that numerical value. So for example, Yud is 10, 10. You only take the 1. Resh is 200. Okay, now let's do Yerubal. So Yud is 10, but you only take the 1. Resh is 200, but you only take the 2. You ignore the other 2 zeros. Beis is 2, so you take that 2. Ayin is 70, take the 7 and drop the 0. Lamed is 30, take the 3. So again, Yud 1, Resh 2, Beis 2, Ayin 7, and Lamed 3 for a total of 15. Okay, so we have 300 men plus 15 of Yerubal using Mispar Katan plus the 3 items that the soldiers were holding, the shofaros, the jugs, and the torches, that's 318. So he says that the 318 here with the Mispar Katan and the symbolism is also symbolic of Avraham's miraculous battle with Avraham and Eliezer against the 4 kings, similar to Gidon and his 300 men against this massive Midianite force. Okay, I thought that was interesting. The Malbim says that Gidon had an 8-part strategy here, right? Military strategy, 8 parts. Number 1, Gidon splits them into 3 camps to approach from 3 different sides, right? Taking them by surprise. Number 2, he wants to scare them with the battle sound of the shofaros. Now, usually, as we'll see in the Mefarshim, you know, they had one person in the camp blowing a shofar when they went to battle. Here they have 300 men all blowing shofaros. So this was a much louder noise than typical when it came to battle. Number 3, he wanted to scare them with the fire and the smoke of the torches. As soon as the jugs were broken, all of a sudden they see fire, 300 torches, and all this smoke, that's also going to scare them. Number 4, the sound itself of the breaking of the jugs altogether and the sudden appearance of fire is going to scare them. Let's look at Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayomer Aleihem, Mimeni Tir'u. So Gidon says to the men, the 300 men that he splits up into 3 camps, look at me, V'chein Ta'asu, and I want you to copy exactly what I do. V'hinei Anochi Ba B'Kzeh Amachaneh, I'm going to approach with one of the camps. I'm going to get close to the edge of the Midianite camp. V'hayocha Ka'asher E'aseh, Chein Ta'asu, and just follow exactly what I do. As soon as you see me doing it, I want you all to copy. So he approaches from one side with his with 100 men, right? And he's got another 100 men, you know, another 200 men coming from 2 other directions. Says the Malbim, this is 5 and 6. 5, Gidon is leading the troops. 6, they're going to copy him. Okay, everything he's doing. The Pasuk Yilches, V'sakati b'shofar anochi, v'chol asher iti. Gidon says, I'm going to blow the shofar. All of my 100 men that are with me are going to blow the shofar as well. And then as soon as you see us doing that, I want you, all you 200 men in the 2 different camps coming from the other sides, to blow the shofar as well. Usikatem bashofaros kam atem sevivos kol amachne. I want you two that are surrounding the camp to blow your shofaros as well. Va'amartem, and I want you to say, but this is really, imagine, I mean, this is like a battle cry. So it's not just saying, but it's screaming, La'ashem ulegido. Right, that this war, our battle here is for Hashem and for Gidon. Okay, so the Malbim says this is 7 and 8. That the number 1, to blow the shofaros, and as the Malbim explains, usually one person blows, and here you have 300 people blowing. So this is quite the sound. And number 8, this scream, this battle cry of Lashem Elogidon, which the Malbim says Lashem, is that this battle is going to be miraculous. Our victory is going to be miraculous. It's because of Hashem. And Legidon, because Gidon is our general. He's the one, he's the Shaliach Hashem, through which this victory is going to come. So these are the things that we're going to do. And most of the Mefarshim understand in the same way. It's interesting, the Alshech points out that, of course, the Iker reason for the victory is HaKadosh Baruch. And they are saying Lashem, right? They're saying Lashem. So says the Alshech, why mention Gidon at all? You know, Gidon is the Shaliach Hashem, he's the general. But really, this is all a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's a miraculous battle. They're going to war with 300 men against a massive Midianite Amaleki and Bnei Kedem force. I mean, it's not even a question that this is a completely miraculous victory. But he says that at a time of danger, at a time of sakana, the Satan is mekatrig, the Satan is prosecuting. He's trying to find faults. He's trying to find holes. And Bnei Yisrael, again, like we said, were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They didn't have all the zechuyos that they may have needed. So therefore, they wanted to say, LaHashem uleGidon. We're going with Gidon's chus. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Iker, and he's the one who's arranging our miraculous victory. But we're going in this chus of Gidon. We're going in this chus of Gidon. So if the Satan comes and tries to prosecute, tries to be mekatrek, it's not he's not going to find anything. Gidon is a tzaddik, and we're doing it in Gidon. We're going to win in Gidon's chus. Excuse me. Okay. Pasuk Yutes. Vayavo Gidon umea ish asher ito bikzeh hamachaneh. So Gidon comes with his 100 men. Right? Gidon is leading this force of 100 men brings them to the edge of the Midianite camp. Rosh Hashmores. It's the beginning. I'm sorry. Rosh Hashmores hatichona. It's the beginning of the middle watch. And we'll learn about that in a minute. Achakem heikimu es hashomrim. But they've already, the guards have already established themselves. They've already stood up to take their positions. Vayisku uba shofaros. Gidon and his 100 men blow the shofar. Venafot akadim asher biyodim, and they smash the jugs that are in their hands. And we'll see in a minute that the other camps follow suit. Just interesting in this pasuk, the Rosh Hashmores hatichona. So for those of you who've learned the beginning of Maseches Brachos, so you know that there are three Ashmoros, right? There are three divisions, the sections of the night, so to speak. And here, Rashi and the Radak both explain this way, that listen, you know, in battle, the camps, they went to sleep at night. If it wasn't in the middle of a battle, they went to sleep. So this whole camp is sleeping, it's the middle of the night, but they need guards, you know, to guard the camp. So they had three shifts. The beginning of the night, the middle, and the end, the three shifts throughout the night. So this was the beginning of the second shift. And the Ralbag says that this was really the middle of the night. It's the beginning of the second shift. Most of the camp is sound asleep. And that's why they decided to do it at this time. So most of the camp is sound asleep. It's a real element of surprise here. And also, it's interesting, the Malbim says in a fascinating way, he says specifically they waited for the changing of the guard. Why? Because the guards who had just finished their shift, they were exhausted. They had been staying up and guarding, you know, a third of the night. Let's say the night it's around 12 hours or so. They're guarding for 4 hours, be'erach, you know, 3-4 hours. So they are tired and they just went to sleep. The guards who are taking over now, they were just woken up. So they're still a little groggy. They're still like rubbing their eyes. They're not alert 100% yet. They're still a little groggy from their sleep, but they've just been woken up to guard the camp. So this is the perfect time because the guards are, you know, the alert guards just went to sleep and the guards that just took their places are a little bit groggy. So this is the perfect time. So they come at this time and the Rabag says, since most of the camp is sleeping, so this was an incredible surprise. Imagine, you know, all of a sudden hearing 300 shofaros. Imagine you're sleeping. And again, Gidon and his men are right, they're right at the edge of the camp. They're not very far away. They're right next to the camp. And all of a sudden, 100 shofaros blow. The jugs are smashing. Okay, as soon as this happens, Pasuk Chav, Vayisku shloshes haroshim bashofaros. The other two camps also blow their shofaros. So you have a full 300 shofaros blowing at once. Vayishberu akadim, and they also smash their jugs. Vayachaziku biyad smolam balapidim. They grab, they're holding the torches now in their left hands. And they're blowing the shofaros with their right hands. Liskoa, they're holding them in order to blow. And they call out Cherev LaHashem Ulegidon. They call out that like Gidon told them to do. They called out that this sword and this battle is for Hashem and for Gidon. So this is like, you know, an incredible thing that they're waking up this camp this way. The Malbim says that they screamed this even before they blew the shofaros. He says, if you look at the pasuk, it says they took the shofaros to blow, but they screamed it even before they blew the shofaros. And now all of a sudden, complete pandemonium breaks out in the camp. Because again, the Midianim and the Amalekim and the Bnei Kedem are sound asleep. And all of a sudden they wake up to 300, you know, imagine like 300 trumpets blowing, you know, right next to your house. And 300 jugs being smashed right next to your house. I mean, it was like they woke up and they didn't know what hit everybody. You know, they didn't know what hit them. It was complete pandemonium. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayamdu ish tachtav saviv lamachaneh. The Jewish, this is referring to the Bnei Yisrael camp. The Bnei Yisrael camp stood their ground. They didn't even move. They stood their ground surrounding the camp. Vayarotz kol lamachaneh. Vayariu vayanusu. And all of a sudden, the entire camp, they start running. They start blowing the shofar. They don't know what's going on. They're all confused. Rashi says that the Vayariu was a call to flee. This was a different type of, it was like a trua almost. This was like the signal, let's get out of here. Everybody just run for your lives. That's how the Rashi understands. The Radak also understands this way, that this is out of fear. They're just blowing and running. Everybody's just getting out of there. The Malbim says this was part of the confusion. The Malbim says that the Vayariu was really a war blow. They were blowing to go to battle. But he says this was the confusion, because part of the camp was thought that they're going into battle now to fight. Part of the camp thinks that they're being defeated and they're running. So everybody's doing different things. There's no coordination. Everybody's in complete pandemonium. Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayiskeu Shalosh Meos HaShofaros, Vayasem Hashem Escherev Ishbereehu. So now this is like the Malbim. The Malbim says now they blow the 300 shofaros. Again, the Midyanim, this whole camp is completely confused, complete pandemonium. Vayasem Hashem Escherev Ishbereehu. They start killing each other. Because again, they wake up and they look, there's someone next to them. They don't know, is that a soldier attacking me? Is that my friend? They take their swords and they start killing the people next to them because they think they're the enemy that's coming to attack them. Meanwhile, Bnei Yisrael is still standing their ground around the camp. They haven't even gone in, right? But this is all, they're just start killing each other. People start, they take off, they start running, they start fleeing for their lives to this place called Beis Hashita, Tzirei Rasa, toward the Tzireira. Atzfas Avel Mechola Al Tabas. Again, these are just places, but they begin running for the hills, basically, the Midyanim. Totally confused, complete pandemonium. They're now just running for the hills. They don't know what's going on. And some of them are killing the other ones, and the others are just running for their lives. Pasuk Chof Gimel. Vayitzo'ek Ish Yisrael Min Aftali Umin Asher Min Kol Menashe Vayirdifu Acharei Midyan. So now the reinforcements come in. Naphtali, Asher, Menashe, these were the local Shvatim that were close by. And now Vayitzaek, again, remember, we learned this in the past, that Tzaak means to scream, but here it means they gathered, because they would scream out, time to let's go, everybody gather around, everybody come to war, come to battle. So they all gather now, and they're chasing Acharei Midyan, they're chasing the camp. They now jump in to chase. If you remember, the Malbim says at the beginning of the Perek, we learned last week, he sent away all the people that were afraid. So if you remember, the Malbim said, he didn't send them very far. He said, go wait on the mountaintop over there. Why? Because he knew that when this camp, the Midian camp, was going to run, they were going to run for their lives. He knew that he wanted these people in position to be able to pounce, to be able to attack as Midian is running, as Midian is fleeing. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. Umalachim shalach Gidon b'chol Har Ephraim le'mor. Gidon sends runners. He sends messengers to go to Har Ephraim, to the mountains of Ephraim, and to tell them, Redu likras Midyan. Midyan is coming. I want you guys to come down and to kill them. V'lichdu lohem es hamayim ad beis bara. Oh, but he says first, I want you to take over the crossings, the river crossings. V'es hayarde. So there was one river, apparently one waterway that crossed from Eretz Yisrael into Aram, and then there was another one that was the Yarden. I want you guys to take all the border crossings, all the river, all the waterways, block them up so that the Midyanim can't flee. They're going to run. They're trying to run out of the country. They're trying to run across the Yarden, run to Aram. Block the waterways. Take control of the bridges so that they can't flee. That was number one. Vayitzoi kolish Ephraim, and that's what they did. Bnei Ephraim came down to help. And they blocked up all the waterways. They captured all of the bridges to make sure that none of the Midyanim could escape in that way. And then, Pasuk Chafei, the final Pasuk. So they captured, right? It sounds like the Bnei Ephraim did this. The Bnei Ephraim who just blocked the bridges, they captured two of the Sarei Midyan, two of the Midyani generals, Orev and Ze'ev. Orev and Ze'ev were the names of these two generals, the Midyanite generals. They captured them. They killed Orev in this place called Tsur, which was later, after they killed him there, they named it Tsur Orev, that this was the place that Orev was killed, the rock of Orev. And they killed Ze'ev in this place called Yakev Ze'ev. Yakev is a winery. But they said, you know, Rashi, the Rabbah says there was a place that looked like a winery. It wasn't an actual winery, but it had a resemblance to a winery. That's why they called it Yakev Ze'ev. Vayirdifu el Midyan, and they chased Midyan. They didn't give up. They kept chasing Midyan. Virosh Orev uze'ev heviu el Gidon me'ever layarden. It sounds like they severed the heads of Orev and Ze'ev, and they brought the heads of these Midianite generals to Gidon, who was now in Ever Hayarden. And now we're going to learn in Mirtz Hashem next week, or maybe the week after, Perek Ches, exactly what happened with the rest of this battle and how Gidon finishes off the war. Okay, that's the end of Perek Zion. Pay attention to the bulletin next week. I don't think there'll be a shir. It's the 19th. That's the day I'm bringing my family home from the camp. So I think it'll be a little too crazy to have a shir that night. So probably we'll be off next week, but then Mirtz Hashem will resume hopefully after that. Pay attention to the bulletin. Thank you all for joining us. Have a wonderful night.